What's up, everyone? Aaron Nagler here with Cheesehead TV, talking some football with Andy Herman the day after the Packers go, meh, all over Lambeau Field. Andy, what was your, I guess, initial takeaway from what we saw? And then after you got to sit with it for a little while, how did you view yesterday's game?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a difference between the two, to be honest. I think it's getting harder to reconcile how a team can be so good for a year and a half under Matt LaFleur, go to an NFC championship game, win a ton of games, very seldom lose, yet have a trend of not showing up and playing their hardest and with the most energy and things like that. So it's just trying to figure out how you reconcile those two things. It seems that they have the leadership with the coaches. It seems like they have a leadership on both sides of the field. This is not a team that lacks for veterans that know how to get a team ready and prepared. I would love to analyze it and say, here, I know what's going on and I know why this is the case, but I'm kind of at a loss for trying to figure it out. I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
I mean, it's funny that these are happening, these games where they come out flat at home. You know, yeah. They don't seem to have the issue when they're on the road, because to my mind, my guesswork is, you know, it's that you're all traveling together. It's us versus the world mentality, the bunker mentality that a team gets when it does travel. When they're at home, yeah, they are a little comfortable. And I'm with Aaron Rodgers, what he said after the game yesterday. Like, start treating it like there are fans in the stands, even if there aren't. Play Roll Out the Barrel. Play YMCA. You know, give the place a little atmosphere, because right now it feels really staid and kind of static. I mean, there are literally signs for Bell and Health where, you know, normally there would be fans. I mean, I understand that it's a job and it's your job to get up for it, but, you know, at least help the guys a little bit, because right now the opposing teams, the last two times they played in Lambeau, have seemingly had more fun doing Lambeau leaps, taking in the atmosphere, than the Packers have. And that's supposed to be their, you know, their home field is where they're supposed to live. So, I mean, I'm just glad LaFleur actually kind of mentioned the lack of emotion.
Agreed.
Because it's rare that you get a head coach or anybody with the team to actually acknowledge that, because you don't want to put that on them from the outside looking in. But for him to acknowledge it, especially right out the gate yesterday after the game, I think was very telling. Let's put that aside for now, though, because, like, you know, we try to, like, keep it football, right? So we look at the football stuff. There's no doubt they came out flat, but there was also some interesting things in regards to, you know, Aaron Jones seemed to kind of electrify the offense 2 weeks ago against the 49ers, but he had a real tough time getting anything going. What did you see from the Jaguars that kind of helped them, I guess, keep Aaron Jones under wraps, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it was a Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, who said that they were playing a lot of eight-man boxes, kind of that Seattle Seahawks style of defense, which when I went back and watched it after the press conference, I did notice they were, you know, stacking the box. They saw a lot of unfriendly looks up front, and with the wind and everything like that, you can understand why they kind of wanted to go. That's kind of what I wanted to see Mike Pettine do against Jake Luton and some of these other, you know, and Kirk Cousins.
We'll get there.
You know, so I think, you know, you saw some unfavorable looks up front. I think, you know, the big thing was that they were able to stretch the field with the big play to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, which was, you know, a huge play in that game. They were able to continue to attack downfield. Outside of the interception from Rodgers, I thought he played a really nice game. He did have the miss to Tonyan early, which I tweeted out. He doesn't miss often this year, but when he does, it always seems to be to Robert Tonyan for some reason. So, but no, I'm not exactly sure. I thought Jamal Williams ran very hard. I thought he gained a couple extra yards here and there.
Yes.
Just weren't easy yards, and he found ways to get them. And I think it was just a little bit of a tougher slug, you know, for Aaron Jones this last game.
Well, it's interesting. Rodgers did mention the wind taking that throw to Tonyan, but to me, it's like I know I'm not on the field and I can't see it, but man, it sure looked like he expected Tonyan to turn that in or like bend it in a little bit, and Tonyan just kept taking it straight up the field. And that's a quibble, but I think, as you say, it's funny too, because it's one of those games where, you know, Rodgers, you don't think of it as okay, he's putting up good numbers, but he put up decent numbers yesterday. It's not like he had a bad game by any stretch, but man, that interception was one of the uglier throws you're going to see from Aaron Rodgers.
Just going back really quick, I thought that throw to MVS was gorgeous. I mean, in those conditions, they hit him in stride. And then one of the plays of the year that'll never go down in the stat sheet is that throw and catch by Davante Adams against cover two, you know, under man defense. That was just a gorgeous, disgusting route and just a ridiculous ball from Rodgers. And it's just one of those that because of the hold on Turner will, you know, be left, you know, yep. never see the light of day.
Designed to the scrap heap, so to speak. Exactly. Right. What did you think of the work David Bakhtiari did in his first start back? It's kind of interesting because, you know, I know he had the false start penalty and, you know, we saw him get into it with Miles Jack after Jack's hit on Irvin. But for the most part, you didn't really see him, which I think is what you expect, right? You expect David Bakhtiari to slide back in, especially after news of that contract extension breaking. Look like the 69 that we've always come to know and expect.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. You know, and I think that's the reason that you know, give a third contract to an almost 30-year-old offensive lineman, which Green Bay has been mostly averse to doing throughout their time, at least in the last 10, 15 years. But he's just somebody that is, you know, going to continually put in the effort and the consistency. He's not somebody that's going to get the bag and then just shut it down or take his foot off the gas. He's going to be that same guy day in and day out. He mentioned it right in his press conference. He said they're, you know, they didn't regret it in 13. They didn't regret it in 16. They're not going to regret it in 20. And I think you start seeing, you know, offensive linemen, you know, Andrew Whitworth, who went out yesterday, unfortunately, he's 38 right. years old and he's playing at the top of his game still. You know, Trent Williams is 32, I believe, going on right. 33, still playing at the top of his game. You know, this is a position where if you've got the technique and the athletic ability, which Bakhtiari has both in spades, you can continue to perform for a very long time. And I thought he just went in after his injury, did his job once again. I'm really going to be interested to see how the run blocking went as a whole, just because as we just mentioned, it there wasn't a lot of space for either Jamal Williams or Aaron Jones. So what broke down? Was it an individual player? Was it just the fact that they were, you know, stacking with 8-man boxes? So that I'm really interested to see. But from a pass protection standpoint, you just slotted your all-pro left tackle right back in and he played great.
Yeah, it's funny because I was wondering, and I'm debating whether to ask LaFleur about this later, but to me, I'd love to get your take on this. We know that they're going to want to run zone. That is what they do. That is who they are. But it seems to me it might be time to try and start throwing in some wrinkles in regards to maybe some angle blocking, maybe some traps, maybe some pull, you know, just something to mix it up. Not that they're going to stop being a zone team, because we know that's never going to happen. But it sure seems that teams have the book kind of on what the Packers want to do in regards to the run game. And I thought Jacksonville did an excellent job in that regard.
You know, I think a part of why I feel this way is because Aaron Jones missed some time, but it just feels like it's been a really long time since we've seen an explosive run from this Packers offense. And I think when you do have a veteran offensive line with Bakhtiari and Turner and, you know, even Lucas Patrick to an extent, Corey Linsley, and then just a really damn good player in Elton Jenkins, I think you can throw a little bit more at them. And we saw a season ago San Francisco have so much success running a variety of schemes, not only the stretch, but traps and pulls and power run and literally everything that you wanted to do. Then they were able to handle it. And to me, if that San Francisco offensive line was able to handle some of that stuff, there's no reason that Green Bay can't with the veterans that they have. So it seems they have the core concepts of LaFleur system worked out and can run that. Now throw a little bit more at them, throw a couple wrinkles in and see how they do, because I'm right there with you. I think just do a couple different things here and there would maybe open up Aaron Jones for a little bit more success and maybe some more explosive plays.
All right, let's flip it around to the defensive side of the ball so we can talk about our favorite gentleman, Mr. Mike Pettine. It's interesting because all the talk about a lack of juice and a lack of energy from the team itself, I do think it almost is funny because it's hard for me to put it all on the players when your coach is consistently calling passive kind of looks and coverages and giving you, I guess, assignments, quote unquote, that don't allow you to get physical. But then we saw when these backups, and there were a lot of backups in there in the secondary, when they were allowed to be physical with guys at the line of scrimmage, the time they did call, say, 2-man across or what have you, they seemed to rise to that occasion. And right. I think that kind of you saw that with the pass rush as well. The pass rush maybe didn't get home as much as you'd like early on, but you certainly saw it affecting the pocket and affecting the quarterback. And I just think, I know this is simplistic of me, but at some point I would think you got to let these guys be physical, let them attack the offense rather than always allowing the offense to dictate terms.
It's funny. Maggie and I talked about that almost verbatim last night for today's Pack-A-Day podcast. You want to gain some energy for your team, go out and let them blitz more and have some exotic blitzes and make it so that it's something different on every play. When you're running consistent 3- and 4-man rushes up front and doing kind of the same thing, and it's just a difference between, are we doing off coverage, cover 2, cover 3? And it's just kind of a lot of the same stuff over and over. I think the defense, it's tough to get kind of energized by that. And to your point exactly, instead of letting the offense kind of dictate to you, I think this defense needs to take a few more chances, be a bit more aggressive, and see what they can come up with. Maybe yesterday was the wrong game to do that with Jair Alexander out and Kevin King out, right, and things like, right, that. But at some point, I do think you need to do some of that. And what I look at from a coaching standpoint, just kind of going over Mike Pettine, I'm on both sides of the ball. First of all, how many players on your side of the ball are either overachieving, achieving, or underachieving? And I think you look at this Packers defense as a whole, and it's very difficult to point out players who you say, you know what, they are exceeding my expectations. Maybe, right, Jair Alexander you can put in that just because he's been that damn good. But I don't know of anyone else that I can say has exceeded my expectations on defense this year. Everyone else is either at or below expectations, and especially some of your core players, the Z's, the Kenny Clarks, yep, the Austin Smiths, the Rashawn Gary's, for the most part, either at or below expectations. And then the other thing I look at, and kind of same thing both on offense and defense, how many times can your coordinator just scheme something for somebody to get, whether it's on offense, a free receiver, an open receiver. We saw Davante Adams come open on a crosser yesterday. Just a couple of those plays per game where there's just a wide open player because the coach did the heavy lifting and he figured out a weakness and he figured out a play that was going to work against that defense in a key spot. It's the same for Mike Pettine. When is the last time we saw just a flat out free rusher get home because he outsmarted the offensive coordinator? It's been, right, for me a long time. We saw a long time. With Chandon Sullivan, where he just biffed the play when he came free against...
Down in Houston, yep.
In Houston, yep. Thank you, against Deshaun Watson. But outside of that, it's just been so few and far between, and I think it's time to spice things up. And we've gone back to this before. It's so different from the 2018 Mike Pettine, who had nothing to work with and seemed like every week came up with a play or two where he was able to scheme open a free blitzer and cause pressure and havoc. So I just need a little bit more of that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I get it's never as easy. And Andy and I both recognize this. For any commenter or tweeter or whoever is out there listening, it's never as easy. Just blitz more. We're not just saying that. We're not. It's never a blanket thing, but it is a mentality. And the thing that I point to out of this game that drives me more insane than anything else, more than the 3-man rush, more than the playing off 10 yards on 3rd and 5, more than any other instance in this game or any other time of the year, the play that drove me the most insane yesterday was Jacksonville's backed up on their own end. Robinson gets by a really suspect tackle attempt from Preston Smith, which is not what drove me nuts. But then ends up, you know, tripping and falling on the ground. And 2 or 3 Packers defenders are in the area just lounging around, just kind of half jogging, going, oh, the play is over, rather than rallying to the football and making sure he's touched down. Robinson proceeds to get back up, gains more yardage, and then he's touched down. It's like, Matt LaFleur, how many times have we heard him talk about when we do question the defense or like the aggressiveness or lack thereof? He always talked about wanting 11 hats on the ball. You turn on the game last night, you turn on that Patriots team, that's a team that has got a losing record, playing in the fucking slop. They have very little chance of doing much in the postseason, but they are rallying to every ball carrier. They are absolutely swarming on every single play, whereas with the Packers, I never sense that. I never get this idea that guys are wanting to kind of arrive in a bad way at the ball carrier and make sure they hit and drive him into the ground en masse. Like, it's always like, okay, I make this tackle and it's kind of a shoestring thing and ooh, maybe he breaks out of it. No, he didn't. Oh my God, what a relief. And everyone else is kind of watching. So it feels like a mentality thing when I watch the Packers. And I don't know how you fix that outside of switching defensive coordinators, which we know they're not going to do in the middle of the season.
And it's interesting too, not only the rallying to the football, but I can't even remember how many times, you know, James Robinson fell forward after every single hit. Yes. There wasn't one time where he just got stood up, tackled, and pushed backwards. So yep. You need to see more of that as well. And that's when we talked about it at the beginning, that energy and that passion and that intensity. I mentioned that Green Bay has a lot of leaders on both sides of the football. but they don't have a ton of really over-energized Ray Lewis, Reggie White type, you know, in-your-face type leaders. And they kind of got rid of the Mike Daniels, and that didn't seem to work either. But, you know, they kind of got rid of a lot of, you know, some of those passionate type players. You have Mercedes Lewis, who's more of a lead by example, calmer type guy. The same could be said for Corey Linsley and Aaron Rodgers and Preston Smith and Adrian Amos. Like, they are more lead by example, calm and collected. Do they need an influx of a player or two who are just going to have that passion and that energy and excitement? Because you don't even need to look outside of that game yesterday. The Jaguars, and multiple times,
would make they brought it all day long.
So much energy. It was just youth and exuberance and excitement. And it just didn't have that with Green Bay. And I don't know, again, I don't know exactly what that is, but it seems like there's just an ingredient missing.
Well, it's funny too, because you always talk about how a team is a reflection of its coach, right? And obviously, I think Rodgers plays into this a little bit as well, in regards to whenever you talk, hear Aaron talk about leadership, he always says, you mentioned Mike Daniels. It was very clear that that was not Aaron Rodgers' style. No. This idea of a guy being rah-rah, always in your face, always yelling. He has spoken at length about false bravado, you know, bravado, this idea of, you know, you don't have to be loud about it. And I get that. Yep. But I completely agree with you, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I do think they maybe have that guy lying in wait in Kamal Martin. He just hasn't been on the field a lot. You know, yesterday, what did he play, 13 snaps? Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be pumping up the defensive side of the ball if you're on the sideline all the time. But you saw when he blew up the running back on that blitz. You've seen him, like, fill both in the Minnesota game and in this Jaguars game, where he fills the gap in a run game and knocks somebody back for no gain. I mean, those are the kind of plays you look to energize your football team.
Exactly.
But if he's not on the field, it's going to be hard to rally around it. All right, we don't usually go down the special teams route, but goddamn, there were a number of miscues yesterday in special teams. Let's start with the coverage. I mean, I love that McAfee pointed this out on his Twitter. The idea that there are literally a line of guys looking like they're lining up for lunch in middle school on a coverage unit where you're supposed to fan out and form a net. Look, I'll talk about J.K. Scott in a bit, but Menenga is in a tough spot here because, yes, they are bringing guys up and down. There are a lot of injuries. You've got guys up the practice squad who are just playing that week, etc. But that is your job. Yeah. And there are 31 other special teams coaches having to go through the same thing. So it's hard for me to sit here, and I think Matt, you know, to his credit, said this as well after the game. You can't use that as an excuse. And golly, that was kind of piss poor from the special teams yesterday.
And it's so weird because I feel like as a fan base, Packer fans just want special teams to be neutral. Just like, don't make mistakes. Don't give me, don't give me the high highs. Don't give me the low lows. Just let the offense and defense win the game, because I don't want this to come down to special teams. But yesterday's a phenomenal example of, like, it can change things in a hurry. Not only the punt return for a touchdown, but Green Bay was consistently pinned deep in their own territory. Yes. And Jacksonville was consistently getting really great field position. So those things have the ability to swing a football game, especially when you're, you know, have it, letting a team like the Jaguars kind of hang around in it. Those things pay huge dividends. And at some point, at what point do you look at your franchise and say, you know what, for the last 30 years, we haven't done this right, and we haven't built our special teams to be a winning unit? And, you know, you go back, the Packers probably don't win a Super Bowl in 96 if it weren't for their special teams.
Of course. You know? Absolutely. I mean, no question. The only reason they're there. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, it needs to be addressed in greater detail. I know different organizations do it different, where they allow, you know, a certain amount of, you know, people on their 53-man roster who are dedicated to special teams. What Matthew Slater, you know, basically made a huge Pro Bowl career off of doing it for New England. But something's got to give, because you have a really great kicker, and that kind of takes care of itself. Everything else, every single year, just seems to be, again, you're just praying for nothing major to happen and just hope your offense and defense can win it.
Prayer is often the most optimal avenue to turn down when looking at the special teams, which brings me to J.K. Scott. Look, we all love calling him the weapon. We all love his story, the Wisconsin connections with his family. The fact that he's a draft pick, I think, colors people's perceptions sometimes. But look, we're 3 years into this now, and we're once again faced with the idea of, we've got a kicker, or I'm sorry, a punter in Green Bay who seems to really maybe not fall apart, but his consistency certainly falls apart as soon as the weather turns. And I'm sorry, half of your season in Green Bay is spent kicking in inclement weather, is spent kicking outdoors in the cold, in the wind, in the rain, in the snow. I mean, I don't know how much longer they can abide J.K. Scott if he's going to continually give them shanks at the worst possible moment.
It's so funny because in the same exact draft, Brian Gutekunst drafted the same player in offense, defense, and special teams, MBS, Josh Jackson, and J.K. Scott. All of them have immense talent who at times are going to absolutely wow you, and then at other times are just going to absolutely break your heart. All three from the same draft in all three phases. So it's the same thing. It's just, you know, there's, to me, for, you know, I'm not a head coach, but what I would hate most as a head coach is just inconsistency. Like, I just want to know what I'm going to get when I put the player out on the
field. Exactly.
And especially on special teams, like, and in a position like that, like, if I know that my guy is going to, you know, kick a 45 yarder high in the air every time or 40 yard, you know, whatever, at least I know what I'm going to get. But if you're going to get, sometimes it's a line drive, sometimes it's a shank, sometimes it's a booming, you know, 40 yarder that's like a 7.0 hang time. Like, there's just no consistency to it. And to be fair, that's exactly what he was in college too. You go back and watch him in college, which is no fun to do. I don't recommend doing it, but it was the same thing, you know, where he would just boom punts all day long and then it would be like a 13 yard shank. Like, he has a really unique style where it's based on his, you know, complete rhythm and where he places the ball every single time. And if like one thing in his mechanics goes wrong, like, it's just a nightmare. So yeah, it's great when that's working and it looks really good when he does it right. But like, just the smallest variance, and it, again, the punts all over the place. And we saw that again this week.
You know, it's so great about you saying that about what you would want as a head coach is you have finally crystallized how I feel about this matter, because I am now, I understand now, I am John Cusack in High Fidelity and the Packers special teams are like Jack Black and they're bugging me about what to play in the record store. And I'm sitting there going, I just want something I can ignore. Yeah. Like, that's it. I just want, like you said, I want to be able to set my watch. I want to go, okay, here comes my punt unit, and I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I understand that that's, you know, easy to say and a lot harder to like materialize, but God darn it. I'm just, there, you know, two things I want in this life, an actual Packers defense and a special teams unit I can count on. I know the defense isn't going to happen anytime soon because the Packers have been trying for decades and it just hasn't happened. But the special teams, I would think, would be a little bit easier to fix because of the nature of specialists.
It's so funny how certain teams are just like, the Bears can have the greatest middle linebackers in the history of the world from time on end, forever, but can't find a quarterback to save their life. Like, the Packers can have decades of amazing quarterback play, but like, can't find a punter at, you know, ever, except for Craig Hendrick, you like once in a billion years. Like, it's just the weirdest freaking things that the franchises go through.
I love it. I'm talking to Andy Herman, the Pack-A-Day podcast founder and grand poobah of all the Packers content on the internet. Andy, can't thank you enough for this therapy session. I look forward to it every week. We'll talk to you after the Colts game.
Can't wait. Thanks so much, Aaron.